The student who had prepared to give this forum talk is unable to do so this morning. And so we do have the talk with us as prepared by the student, and we will give it out as the student intended. And afterwards, we will welcome your questions, comments, and any further discussion you may have on the subject. And it is a vast subject. Remembrance, recollection, reminiscence. Eternity can have neither past nor future, but only the present. The past no more exists than the future. Only our memories survive. Memory, the despair of the materialist, the enigma of the psychologist, the sphinx of science. Memory is an innate power in thinking beings, even animals, of reproducing past impressions by an association of ideas, a faculty depending entirely on the more or less healthy and normal functioning of our physical brain. In the short span of ordinary existence, memory is too weak to register all the events of a lifetime. How frequently do even the most important events lie dormant in our memory until awakened by some association of ideas? Not to mention the memory of purely daily life functions, or a physical, egotistical memory of the lower mental nature, or an activity such as eating or drinking. We would think that most folks probably never think about the wealth of knowledge that they have on so many and diverse subjects and topics: the weather, children, philosophy, medicine, clothes, computers, phones, food, cars, nutrition, transportation, etc., etc., etc. Most of us are a walking, talking, thinking, and sharing encyclopedia of knowledge. Unlike companies like Google, with its mega networks of employees and computer servers and other resources to call upon, you and I are standalone founts of knowledge, experience, and wisdom. We all know basically how Google retrieves the information it needs for any given question or moment, but how do we do it? How do we retrieve something from a long, long time ago to a current conversation? All these questions must inevitably lead us to the somewhat intricate subject of memory. But when we think of memory, know that is just the generic name for the innate power within us thinking beings to reproduce past impressions. Let's assume, for the sake of this forum, that your name is John or Jane Doe. You live the typical American life, if there is such a thing. You're between the ages of 30 and 70 years old. You go to work, you do your job, you come home tired, do what you need to do at home, and at the end of the night, you fall off into bed exhausted. Now, having done this for weeks, months, and years on end, let me ask you a question. What were you doing on October 10th, 1988? What about May 2nd, 1975? I know, try as you can, it's tough to remember something that you did yesterday, let alone years so far removed. So how do you do it? How is it done? What is the trigger? How do I remember things from the past? By an association of ideas suggested by objective things or some action on our five external senses. For example, a special line in a poem may bring back a special memory. Or how about a scent from a bouquet? Perhaps a lyric from a song you just heard, or maybe a glimpse of a look-alike person. Memory, as we think of it, is a faculty depending entirely on the normal functioning of our physical brain. A problem with the brain usually means a problem with the memory. There are, in general, three accepted forms of memory: remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. And there are indeed differences between them. In remembrance, we can get the idea, but not all the particulars that have brought about some feeling, event, or circumstance of the past. It is usually triggered by an association of ideas that comes to us from some external stimuli. For example, you remember having a great steak dinner at a little place in South Philadelphia about 10 years ago, but you can't remember its name or the street it's on. And this great steak dinner that you have may have been triggered by some commercial or advertisement or some billboard or something somebody said or smell that you experienced walking down the street. And then the memory of it sort of pops into your mind. That would be a remembrance. In recollection, though, we can voluntarily and with effort recollect from one point all the other points connected with it. So in this process, you consciously recall, as in retelling it to an individual, that the restaurant you ate at was Harvey's on 2nd Street just below Schunk, and it had linen pattern napkins, beautiful paintings on all the walls, and it was crowded in spite of the pouring rain outside. Obviously, your recollection is more than just a good steak. So that voluntary effort is what we call recollection. Now, the third kind of memory, which we can call real memory, and as we'll see, soul memory, is known as reminiscence. And most importantly, it is not at all dependent upon the health and physical well-being of the brain. Now, out of the countless of impressions and memories of events that we have in our lifetime, very few events are impressed upon us or immediately translatable through the brain into our waking consciousness by way of the other two aspects of forms of memory we've called remembrance and recollection. Even if we so desired and tried until our brain hurt, we could never make a complete history of recollection of all those impressions through those two faculties. So Jane and John, don't fret on those two dates you were asked about earlier. Very few could remember what they did on those dates, unless, of course, they were significant to them, such as a birthday. However, we all have the inherent faculty of recalling, recollecting, and reassembling in such a way as to have a consecutive or synthetic grasp of all such impressions through reminiscence. So reminiscence then is the third kind of memory, and it's by which we assemble and assimilate and synthesize all the countless experiences we have so that it comes through to us as direct knowledge, direct knowing. Reminiscence is that one faculty of memory which applies to the soul and is a truly fascinating innate quality of the soul. It is brought into function oftentimes not by any present object or occurrence arousing attention in that direction, such as a song, lyric, or the scent of a flower might do. It springs directly from the soul itself. Sometimes we might call it conscience or intuition. It comes from something behind the brain, the brain serving merely as sort of a filter, an interceptor, a translator of impressions, a channel, if you will. It is a direct perception of what was otherwise known as true memory or soul memory. On the physical plane, the action of soul memory is seen in all those stages through which the human form goes from conception to birth. In fact, of the evolution of earlier races, in every act of our existence, we are exhibiting soul memory, whether we realize it or not. You might think, the idea is, you have the common expression, it's once you learn how to ride a bike, it's something you never forget. You can get on years later and that knowledge is still with you, although you may forget the many hours of training that went into it. So the memory of walking is with us now. The memory of talking is with us now. Sort of, it's almost instinctive, as we say. And anyone who's tried to practice the piano or some instrument knows after a certain period of repetition, it's just knowledge that comes through directly and often creatively. We may not remember how nor when we learned to talk or to walk or to practice, but we have present with us the knowing how to walk and how to talk. Soul memory is just that, the possession of the knowledge of the past, the possession of the knowledge of the past. It is memory which connects us physically with the body through all the changes of the body seen in circumstances. Without it, we should be living merely from impression to impression. There would be no connection whatever with the past, and there would be no sense of self-identity. So, for example, we wake up in the morning. We don't wake up as a completely blank state, starting from scratch with just new impressions, but we bring with us a knowledge of who we are as individual beings and a synthetic knowledge of our experience and our wisdom as persons, as personalities, or our job, or various things we need to do in life. This is a synthesized soul memory that comes forth. But it is also something that, as we will see, not just operates in one life, but from life to life. This is soul memory, and it is indeed possible to develop for every living being in the course of time. So the barrier for every man is not in the memory, but in the false ideas of life according to which he acts. However much the soul remembers and knows, if we are using the brain contrary to the nature of the soul, and therefore if we are thinking and impressing it with ideas that are contrary to the nature of the soul, soul memory cannot transfer to the brain, and we cannot be aware of it in this waking state of consciousness. We can do so only by thinking and acting along right lines, or lines compatible with the nature of the soul, during active waking consciousness until the brain responds to the ideas and learns to transmit what occurs or has occurred while the body is even inoperative, such as in sleep. Then only then, the true memory of the past, the true knowledge of the past that is in the knowledge, that is in the soul, can become knowledge through acting through the brain in our waking state. Now, to refresh your memory, the subject for today is remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. So, we might begin our interchange of ideas, questions, and answers with reflection that, and recollection, that the overall theme for this month is the mysteries of mind. And the more we address those mysteries of mind, or what we in theosophy would call the mystery of the thinking being, the real human, which is a immortal thinking being, the real soul, we might say, the more we identify that, the more we become aware of the necessity and the correctness of the understanding that we are soul beings, that there is more to us than this physical body, this physical personality, this physical life. There is an inner life, there is an inner being, and memory, particularly soul memory, and awareness of its presence and how it operates in our lives, increases our conviction in that, and therefore affects the way we think and act and feel and relate with others throughout the day. So it is a very practical subject. So at this point, we'll stop and invite your questions and comments on this subject. Yes, ULT.
So we periodically hear the term muscle memory. And it was mentioned in the talk about learning how to play a sport or a musical instrument. After a while, the body just knows what it's supposed to do. So in regards to the three types that we're discussing today, when we're thinking about muscle memory, learning how to play an instrument is usually the best example of this. Where would that fit into those three different types?
Mm-hmm. Theosophy presents us the proposition that everything that manifests proceeds from one source, one deific source. Every form of substance, every degree of inner spiritual understanding, knowledge, and force comes from that one source. And so life, consciousness, will, spirit, memory, all those forces, all those faculties are present in every degree of substance, in every degree of form, in every kingdom of nature, and we might say in every principle of our human nature. Now, one of those principles, the lowest vehicle that we use in life, is the physical body, with made up of cells, tissues, and organs, and systems of organs, but all the cells, every cell, every nerve cell, every muscle cell has its capacity for memory, for receiving impressions and giving them off by the either the association of ideas or through recollection. So there is memory in the muscles. So yes, we can voluntarily, since we know how to walk already, we've trained our muscles, how to walk, we can consciously recollect that ability and direct through our brain the muscles to walk, or the muscles of our arm to raise our arm or to clap our hands or whatever. So that voluntary memory, the cells respond to it. But there is an associative type of memory as well. We're thinking of the examples where we've driven a particular route to work every day for years, and those frightful moments in time when our mind drifts off while we're driving and we wind up where we're supposed to be and have no idea how we got there, but somehow we automatically got there. An amazing feat, but nevertheless dangerous, reminds us that the muscles, all the systems of all the senses of our system have been so trained that they respond. They through natural association, there are certain signals certain changes in the traffic, certain signs, arouse it to do certain things, and we don't have to give it attention. So it is. So we might say, just as the brain operates on a basis of recollection, and as well as association, so do all the cells in the body. Now, the interesting thing is, though, the memory is not stored in those cells, because those cells, every one of them, is continuously changing. There's a continuous interchange of material, substance, are coming and going. So those cells, even the brain themselves, are merely conduits, channels for the real tablet of memory, which is not in the physical body, but in our inner nature. So that even individuals who may have some medical problem where they forget things and their brain is not operating correctly, when they recover from that, their memory comes back. The memory of all the details of what they were and what they did comes back to it. Yes. Follow up there? A question from the Theosophy Hall then? We're not getting any sound.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah,
we find that this idea of muscle memory is really interesting, and we read an article once, but first we would just like to reflect on something that was said, that soul memory, for it to come through clearly and correctly, we have to be right thinking. You know, we have to set our brain up or whatever. And it seems like what was being said is we have to have the right pathways established in our brain to receive the message from our higher nature. You know, Mr. Judge uses the term to make the brain more porous to the dictates of the soul. Well, this reminds us of an article regarding muscle memory, and the hypothesis of the author was that it was not muscle, but somehow the memory was in the nerves. And what the article was about is that he could demonstrate that in people who had seemingly muscle memories, their nerves, they were either thicker or denser, or he was able to measure the difference in nerves where there was, quote, muscle memory versus where there was not. So it's the ability to transmit, just like within the brain from the soul, it also seems it's from the brain through the nerves into the fingers.
Hmm. Thank you.
So the pathway is established.
So yes, no doubt there is and we all are aware of that, there is a connection between the healthy nerve function and the function of the muscles, both in the way we act and receive impressions from the muscles. But the further point is that the capacity for there to be memory in the muscles itself is independent of the nerves. That the cells, even within those muscle tissues, have a capacity for the retention and giving off of impressions. Now, we experience this very often in the way our stomach muscles contract. The muscles of our stomach, if we eat a meal, the autonomic nervous system causes them to go through contractions and function in a way that helps digestion and the passage of the food through the stomach into the intestines. So there's that. But if the time comes for us to eat and for some reason we don't, we forcibly make a decision not to eat, that memory of that contraction is still in the cells. And so they will begin contracting. We've trained them. And so we begin to get hunger pains, we call them. And of course, they'll pass after a while. But it's the memory within the cells themselves that brings about that sensation of hunger and feeds it back through the nervous system to the brain. So Yes, there's a memory. Muscle memory is very much related to the nerves, but the cells themselves, as the cells of the nerves, the cells of the muscles, the cells of the blood, are all capable of retaining and giving off memories. We have a few other questions. JCS?
I was wondering if this is the basis for ULT Philadelphia trying to be so very punctual. We start meetings at a particular time, we end meetings at a particular time. On certain commemorative days, we ask people to show up 5-10 minutes early and make the effort to become centered or meditative. Is memory a part of that issue? Is that why we're doing this?
Mm-hmm. So the question is, how important is punctuality in the application of memory, whether any kind of memory here? So once again, we're looking at this universal law of cause and effect, of cycles, the cyclic return of impressions, which we see in every department of nature. In every degree of substance, in every form. So in every plane of our being, every principle in nature, there is the capacity for a cyclic return of impressions and a cyclic, therefore, a cyclic memory. So cycles can also be established. There are natural cycles that are the result of our previous efforts, but we can establish a cycle. We call it a habit. It says we keep doing that, a habit becomes a character, and a character becomes a destiny. So we can establish certain cycles where the impressions will come back to us when we need them. So if we do things with an idea towards that, this punctuality, we train our entire nature, not just our physical body and capabilities, but our desire nature, our intellectual faculties, our moral principles, our spiritual principles. We train everything to function together at one point in this during a particular time frame. Just like we train those stomach muscles to move when we ate, we can train our whole nature to be at a peak performance at a particular time. So punctuality in everything, not just theosophical work, but punctuality and intention in regulation of one's activities in daily life, whether it be study, work, the performance of duties, whatever we want to accomplish, if we can do it punctually at a certain time, we help establish a cyclic return of impressions, a cyclic memory within our all of our nature. There's another question from ULT, and then we'll go to the chat. Okay. Yes.
As the instrument ages, memory often is a challenge. And functioning, well, if the instrument ages, it begins to, is compromised, we'll say, and this can happen at a younger age as well, although generally it happens as we age. How do we best work with people who have real challenges to their memory? Is anything in the philosophy guide us?
Well, let's go back. A very interesting idea, because we can see that ourselves as well as individuals can have challenges with our memory, regardless of our age or condition. It's a faculty of mind and depends on the healthy functioning of the brain. So, of course, outside of any inherited or illness capacity of the brain brought about by accident or injury, what can we do even on a physical level to help with the proper functioning of the brain? Well, of course, there's that age-old wisdom of doing nothing in excess. Excessive work excessive study can wear out the brain. There needs to be a natural period of activity and rest in terms of called physical activity, as well as our mental exertion on this plane. Periodic middle of the road approach, such as taught in Buddhism, the right living, which includes right, diet and exercise and fresh water and fresh air, and trying to keep the physical body as healthy as possible is a good beginning. But we know that memory itself can be a distraction as we try to accomplish tasks in daily life. Very often the memory of previous experiences, pleasant or unpleasant, may attract our attention, and either into a daydream or some emotional experience, or drift off into some other consideration and pulls us away from the task at hand. And so memory, therefore, has the disintegrative quality of memory on our function has to be trained, and that can be done by a practice of one-pointedness. Whatever we're doing, focus on that particular moment at time, that particular duty, as if it was the sole purpose of our life, and bring all the function of all our capacities, mental, physical, spiritual, moral, to the consideration of that task, to the consideration of that point, and to bring together all the wisdom we can, all of our experience, all of our knowing to that. And through that practice, that daily practice of one-pointedness and concentration of our memories and our abilities, we can overcome this gradual deterioration. We can slow it down, let's put it that way, or keep it at a peak performance. Now, having said that, remembrance and recollection are affected by the brain in its normal aging or incapacitated state. But our reminiscence, our soul memory, our wisdom is not impaired. As a matter of fact, as we get older, sometimes the profoundness and the clarity of our knowing, our experience, our wisdom increases, even as our memory of the details of our everyday life decreases. And that's because of the maturity of our soul memory over time. Especially if we live our lives, as was said before, in trying to make the brain porous through the dictates of the soul, the memories of the soul, by constantly surrounding our inner mental life with ideas compatible with our lives as spiritual beings. We train our instrument in that way. So that gets us naturally into the idea of the chat question here. How come we don't remember our past life? Well, we do and we don't remember our past lives. We may not be able to remember our past lives in the sense of recollection. Let's see, what did I do 10 lives from now, from the past? Or what did I do even in the last life? We might not be able to remember that, but there can be an associative type of memory, a remembrance, deja vu, coming across something or someone or a subject, and I've been through this before. I have a feeling of recognition with this person or this idea. I have a natural instinct or talent for this. It could be in a physical way, or it could be in a relationship way, but it's an associative memory where some type of external experience brings out memory of the past experience that we didn't go through in this life. But also, besides these talents and geniuses and tendencies, we can bring through the accumulated wisdom of our past lives, through our intuition, through our conscience. And we said in the beginning about the associates cards, being in sympathy with the ideas presented in the declaration. Well, sympathy, or even empathy when it comes into relationships, is an inner recognition that this is familiar with me. I know this. I can relate to this. This feels right to me. It's a soul memory. It's a recognition that I am coming in contact with knowledge or experience that I already know and appreciate. So that's another example of memory from our past lives. In time, as we develop, we're told that we can develop the ability to remember the details of our past lives. And there are individuals now and then who do remember some of those details. But that's not the important, the details of what we've gone through in the past. What is important is to recall the wisdom, the lessons, the spiritual value, the enduring value of those experiences. And that we accomplish through soul memory. There's some interesting examples of this mystery of memory. And we can just begin with the ideas. We said, we go through what? How many thousands of experiences do we have during the day that we don't have any conscious recollection or association with? Yes, we might have a few associations and we may be able to recollect some ideas, but there's some impressions that seem forever lost to us, and yet they're there. They're there. And we learn in theosophy, we've been studying in the recent weeks, the after-death states, and one of the first experiences of the after-death condition is during the time, the last times of the life of the body, while the brain is still active, there is a throwing outward of all the impressions within the body down to the last detail. All those impressions which were unconscious to us now come to the surface. And the ego, the real thinker, the real soul, can witness that lifetime experience, that review, that lifetime review. And some people have it into a lesser degree, even approaching a near-death experience, or when they believe they're going to die, that triggers a kind of review. But that is one example to us that we have within us a storehouse of knowledge that although subconscious or unconscious now under the right circumstances, the right state of awareness can come to the surface. We also see it in dreams. We know that we go through the dream state, we have it, but then as we wake up and other memories and experiences of the waking life begin to crowd into our attention, that memory of the dream fades gradually or quickly, unless we've trained ourselves consciously to try to remember the dream or write it down. We may forget it in detail. And yet something may pop up during the day, some associative memory, or may be able to recollect it in certain conditions where we can recall the details of the dream. And so it's stored there. And yes, is that ULT there now?
Yep. Yes. So correct us if we're wrong. Recollection and memory are basically have to do with the mind, whereas reminiscence has more to do with soul memory. And therefore, would that be our the Buddhic nature that is more employed?
Soul memory. Yes. So once again, we spoke generally of three kinds of memory. Remembrance, which is associative memory. Recollection, which is a voluntary conscious effort to recall ideas. Those two depend on the brain. And the term mind was used. Well, in our waking everyday life, our lower minds are interconnected and with the functioning of the brain. The brain is an instrument for the mind on this plane, but it is dependent on the brain. Soul memory, though, belongs purely to the thinking, the reincarnating ego. And as that ego is a trinity of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, there all the impressions of this life, as well as all our lives, are stored in the higher aspects of our mind, in the immortal nature of our mind, which is one and identical with Buddhi. It's an individualization, we might say, of Buddhi, a vehicle for Buddhi or spiritual knowledge and wisdom to work through. Not only is our soul memory stored in Buddhi or in higher mind, but the soul memory of all the species of animals, we might say, is stored in Buddhi. And that comes through as instinct on this plane. So animals from a very young age have certain instincts that they know to do. It's a direct perception from their universal Buddhic nature, which comes through particularly related to the conditions, the instruments of that level of being. So the instinct for a fox is different for the instinct and intelligence that comes through a lion, or for a snake versus a bird. So, yes.
So the follow-up would be that it's all interconnected, and could we not get soul memory come through at any time in our life, and also from past lives we're not consciously aware of where the soul memory is coming from, but there's this great storehouse, this great reservoir that if we especially if we're living a very moral and ethical and altruistic, other-centered type of existence, that this soul memory can come through almost like a flood or a tide could it not?
Yes. Well, if we understand soul memory to be direct knowledge of our past experience, a synthetic accumulation of all our experience that we are already using in everyday life, and we've given some examples. The question then is, can we expand that? Can we develop it in a natural, useful way? And that's probably the main point of this morning's forum, that we can and we do. And we might say that one of the purposes of theosophy is to remind us, because we've forgotten as souls incarnated in these physical circumstances and conditions of the body and brain and personality and society, we've forgotten who and what we really are. We've forgotten our storehouse, our spiritual inheritance of wisdom, which is already in there. And so we say all education from the root of the word educare, to bring out all knowledge, is but a remembrance of past experience. A remembrance of the accumulation of past experience. And we were thinking, anyone in an advanced course of training, in whatever it may be, a new discipline, whether it's nursing or medicine or or philosophy or literature or writing, whatever it is, they know that for years they may have to go through study, intellectual study and memorization of the details and really struggle at making all the connections. And then one day or at one point, it's just there. It's knowledge, it's wisdom. We don't know how it happened, but all that accumulated wisdom suddenly is transformed. And we just know because we were able to bring forth the accumulated, the synthesized wisdom of all that experience and respond without having to go through the drawn out details and memory and exercises that we did before. So that's why we study theosophy, to clear up the channels in our mind, in our brain, to make our bodies better instruments, to get rid of those ideas in our everyday thinking that interfere with and obscure our nature as spiritual beings. So that soul memory, which we already have, we're already souls, and memory is a natural innate faculty of the soul, as it is of every other degree of being and every other degree of substance. If it's in the cell of the muscles, it's in our souls as well, much greater. So it's there, but we need to learn how to use it, to recognize it and to use it. And so probably the best way, well, it's one of the important ways besides study, and is the practical application, to put it into practice. And along with that practical application is the practice of compassion, altruism, love, service. Those intentions, those ideas, those aspirations clear up in the best way all the blockages in our nature. Because we are inherently soul beings who on that plane realize our spiritual identity and interconnection with all of life, with all other beings, and how one affects all. And so that is the reality of our inner spiritual nature. But until we learn to feel and act on that plane compassionately in the idea of brotherhood to the best we can, until we begin to master that, there's obscurations, there's blockages. And so it's a simultaneous practice of the heart and the mind, of study and application through service to ourselves, improving ourselves, and also service, devotion to the best interests of another. We have another chat here. Does everything we do get stored in our subconscious mind? Is that Buddhi or subconscious mind? Everything we do is stored up in the inner planes of our being. It can be stored up in our astral nature, in our astral body. It is stored up in the astral light, the various aspects of the astral light. It's stored up in our thinking principle, in our lower mind, or it's stored up in our egoic nature as the immortal ego. It's stored up in our Buddhi nature. As we said, memory, as all other powers and functions, in general we call spirit or spiritual powers, all come from the same source. They're all universal in essence, and they're all expressed in some degree, appropriate to the degree of being and degree of consciousness. So it's all there. And even though, just as we are, there are as many experiences we have in our physical lives, which are subconscious to us now, we don't have them at our immediate fingertips. There are many aspects of our lives, impressions that are stored up in our inner nature, make up our subconscious mind that we don't have immediate access to. So we'll close here with this idea that, you know, in the beginning of every meeting, we recollect together the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And why do we do that? It's not that because we don't know it. Yes, we know it. But through association of hearing certain words, it awakens within us certain memories, certain soul knowledge, It's like a bell going off, you know, a gong for school. And it's funny, in theosophy school, they used to do that. They used to ring a bell, but it's like a bell. It's like a sympathetic tone, being in sympathy with the ideas. It brings out from within all these ideas that may have been obscured by our daily lives that we weren't thinking about during the day, and brings them to the fore, to a focus for us all, reminds us why we're here and what we're accomplishing together and the wisdom that we've all accumulated to some degree. So with that, we invite you to come next Sunday for our talk on the meaning and symbols of Christmas, and this Wednesday on the after-death states, subjective heaven world. Thank you, and our meeting's adjourned.
Easter.
Oh, yeah. Easter. Thanks for the memory.
Oh, boy.